Welcome to BrandBots, an AI marketing podcast designed to teach you practical strategies for implementing AI into your marketing business. I'm your host, Nick Taylor. Today, we're thrilled to have Phil Maggs on the show. Phil is the creative director and head of New Horizons at Superside, the leading creative as a service company. Superside has been pivotal in assisting over 450 ambitious brands in achieving outstanding design and creative outcomes at scale. Everyone from major corporations like Meta, Google, and Amazon to iconic brands like Coca-Cola, Nike, and Rolls-Royce. By offering a design subscription service, Superside enables teams to overcome design bottlenecks, accelerate their pace, and drive more consistent creative performance across advertising, creative, brand design, video production, and more. As a longtime Superside client myself, I can personally attest to their capabilities. Think of Superside as a NASCAR pit crew of designers ready to enhance your existing team's output or serve as a fully autonomous creative and design powerhouse. In this conversation, Phil and I discussed Superside's operationalized approach to AI at scale across its hundreds of employees and clients. We also get into the ways AI is being integrated into their branding and marketing workflows, the evolving role of creative professionals in this AI-driven landscape, and the operational intricacies and challenges of embedding AI into business processes. And Phil shares some of his favorite AI life hacks. All here on today's episode of BrandBots. This episode starts now. Philip, great to have you here. We were on a really good thread, and I just said we got to hit record. You were talking about how we're going to see a lot of interesting things coming from some smaller, more niche-oriented AI companies. Do you mind expanding on that?
Sora took a lot of people by surprise, but I'm not a savant here, but it didn't take me by surprise because I could just see the linear scale of compute and investment. If you just look where money goes, you kind of go, solving video helps solve world models. It helps solve this thing. And if you can get coherence there, it helps solve so many technical challenges. But that's cool. The things that I don't see coming are these tiny companies doing more interesting things. And so I'm working with some small startups at the moment that are trying to solve the riddle of object permanence within video for brands, right? So brand object permanence, which is potentially a good place to start with, like why it's currently hard. You know, if you've got your Coca-Cola bottle or you've got your, I don't know, your, maybe not Coca-Cola bottles, bad example. Coca-Cola bottles are actually really present in the models. But if you've got your product that's not that present in the model, just does not know what that object is and how to keep it cohesive. And there's some really interesting companies that have seen that and gone, oh, that's a difficult challenge. And I know a bunch of 3-4 person companies that are looking at those challenges because the thing that we were saying when we did our cold open. That OpenAI is not going to solve everyone's use cases, and they're probably really not going to solve marketers' use cases. These companies have quite esoteric, quite high ambitions for changing the world. And I know marketing is a very big part of the world, but I doubt that's where they are completely going. How do I solve a marketing manager's problem about localization of multivariate ads? Like they're probably just, it's such a specific thing. And so that's where my intuition goes, is we've now all got access to these crazily powerful tools. And within the brand and marketing world, we're pretty good at pricing, packaging, understanding markets, understanding like where we should go. We have to build our own use cases out. How do we look at our processes and actually go, AI should be used at step 2, 4, skip 5, 6, 7, and then it should use step 8. That's where we should go. And maybe we should go into that as well as maybe what those steps mean, like tangibly, if that's a useful place to get into as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because I agree. I'm not seeing a lot of specific use cases where it's solving marketing problems unless you really hack together a bunch of custom GPTs with Zapier, hold it together with duct tape, then you might get close. But I do think we're going to see a lot of marketing AI startups for sure.
Yes, I would say, though, so Superside, what we do, we are a pretty scaled creative services company. And I think, and I've worked in the agency land for a very long time, I think, and I've been at Superside for 18 months. I think what makes Superside different is, even though it's remote, all of the talent is under one virtual roof. Is it that we are not an agency that's outsourcing. So from strategy through to execution, across all the modalities of execution, we have the creatives and the producers and the project managers, and we have the talent that can execute. They can sit there on it and draw a storyboard by hand, or they could do cell-based animation, or they could do a PowerPoint design for the, and they will physically do those things. And that is a superpower in and of itself. And what we're trying to do is like design parallel processes with AI that sometimes integrate, sometimes supersede how we can deliver work back to our customers. And those duct taped, gaffer taped together processes are probably at least 50% still of what we're doing within my team, within the creative AI team. A lot of it is, let's figure it out and let's try and find a way forward. And the ones where you find like process market fit kind of thing, that's when you go, great, let's double down on that. Let's put some engineering resource on that. Let's put some, let's take the Zapier into an actual REST API that we can point things to. Let's take that data set and let's actually then use that for training. We don't need the GPT anymore. Let's turn that into a full thing. And that's that quick prototyping, customer testing. This is the key to why we're doing okay with it, and I hope we're doing okay with it, is we don't test offline of our customers. Like, we get a customer come to us with a problem, we'll go, hey, do you mind if we try an AI pipeline to create this? You'll probably save roughly 50% of the hours than you normally would. And they go, yeah, cool. And we try and we do it and we aim to do it. And we try and then to do 10 of them if it works. And if we do 10 of them and our hypothesis proves out, we're like, great, how do we turn that into 1,000 of them? And how do we make that repeatable? And how do we make that a thing? But if unless someone's paying, unless our client is paying and they are publishing what we've given them, everything's academic. The paying and the publishing, from our point of view, is in the client valuing the work and then putting that work out there into the world. That's the sign that it's good enough. My opinion that it's good enough is not right. Your opinion, you will have your opinion, but if you press publish and you put that ad out, or you make that campaign, or you send that deck to your boss, or you put that in the report, that's the signal. Everything I see on Twitter and LinkedIn and Instagram are people going, hey, here's a Iron Man Air Force One Nike shoe. Great. Nike won't publish that, but it's very nice that you made it. That's art. We're talking brand here. Brand, marketing, and the world that is has different standards.
Yeah, the stakes and standards are so
much higher. Stakes and standards, yeah.
Yeah. What does your internal AI workforce look like? Is it a Skunk Works operation within Superside?
That's how it started. So actually, you are pretty much talking to me on the year anniversary. Roughly the 1st of March last year is when we took the test and play and started to go, let's build a Skunk Works around this. That's, and the way that I built, put it together was with a few kind of mantras. Firstly, I had to give the team a safety net. So my tolerance for failure is pretty high. My tolerance for planting seeds and knowing that only, like planting 5 seeds and knowing maybe 2 or 3 will grow is very high. And them knowing that if we're not failing 30, 40% of the time in certain areas, then we're not pushing hard enough. That's where I set the bar.
Yeah.
And I'm the fool guy. I'm the guy that was standing in front of the client and say, man, we have to give you a refund here or we messed this up. Fortunately, that doesn't happen very often, but they know that that's the level. We have a high tolerance for failure. Secondly, I just basically cherry picked people in the business and then did a few bit of hiring as well and said, I really like and respect the fact that you are world-class designers and that you can absolutely run rings around me with your creative skill and your technical prowess. And I think that's lovely, but you're not allowed to use your old tools anymore. I'm going to put them in a box over here. I'm going to put a little lock on them and we'll only like break glass in case of emergency. And you have to start using new tools. That's it. You have to start using them. So you back, give them a safety net and back them into a corner in kind of two ways. And then see how they shine. And it's just remarkable. Because like those two mechanics have then led to some of the most creative and innovative solutions wow. to fix customer problems. And then the final one, I guess, that has come out from that is like we trying to treat the dynamic trading of tools as like the core skill now. So rather than this super deep mastery of Adobe Illustrator, every single function, every single thing, you 1 week might be using Crayo.ai and 1 week you might be using Comfy UI, Stable Diffusion skin, or 1 week you might be going into Runway and 1 week you might be going into Pico, and maybe we can explain what all of those tools are, but the dynamic trading of those tools is in, okay, you've probably got a suite of five that you can use at any one time. Kill one off, put a new one in. Kill one off, put a new one in. Because I think there's currently roughly 5,000 tools within the creative space and AI at the moment. I can't tell you which ones are entirely the best ones.
Yeah.
Like we're bought in and we're scaled roughly. We're not even using 10%. So the dynamic trading of tools to go, actually, this is not currently fixing my problem. What other four alternatives are that out there? Can I quickly get up to speed on what those four alternatives are? Those mechanics have been really just useful and successful because the team feel like they can do it. I'm not cascading from high going, this is the tool that we are going to do and this is the process that we are going to do. Like, I don't know. I know what I know, which is probably maybe a week ahead of some people, but it's not, I'm not years ahead of anyone because no one can be years ahead in this current market.
Yeah. Now, I love that idea that you say to the designer, you have all the creative freedom, but you cannot use your old tools. Just burning the ships, I feel like, is a really good approach to getting people on this new tech. Otherwise, people will be dragging their feet till the end of time. Yeah.
It's an approach, and then like and this, and this is then in parallel to a wider business transformation. So the Skunk Works team, like the creative AI team, we are a merry band of pirates that have crazy high standards, a lot of trust. We're deeply in each other's kind of workflows, and that we will like really help each other, and it's a really powerful thing. It's not necessarily the most scalable model. And Supersight is a scale business. Like we support a lot of customers. I think it's close to 500 like kind of mid-market and enterprise customers. We're doing roughly 20 to 25,000 projects a year with our customers. And it's across every kind of type of work. We have to find systems and processes that actually play out at a larger scale because we're not necessarily having the luxury of a 6-month brief and this perfect, like we do quick work and we do it at high quality. So the thing that scales out is the slower, but equally as important transformation of the business at the same time. And you can't expect everyone to be early adopters.
Yeah.
And you can't expect everyone to feel like they want to burn the boats. So it's having both, again, is just, I think, entirely necessary. Having a 6-week program and a 6-month program is a good thing for making sure you're bringing in everyone with you.
Yeah,
I'm by no means the business transformation expert. I am the learn by doing guy. Like I just get my head into it. I learn what everyone's jobs are. I do their jobs for like days until I can figure it out. And then I can find the pain. And then I can help them find solutions for that pain. And the same with our customers. As in, I speak to customers daily and it's wild the different challenges that they have. The enterprises that haven't even opened ChatGPT because their VPN blocks it.
Yeah. A lot of that nonsense.
Pretty significant, yeah.
One of the things I really liked reading in this article from you on Superside was the dedication that you all have to creative professions, because I feel like there is a lot of anxiety around what does the future look like for designers. And I feel like it's a cliche to draw this comparison, but people were freaking out over Photoshop when it came out, saying that wasn't real art because it was computer assisted. To me, this is just the next iteration. And I think it's also worth noting that when photography happened, you saw the rise of abstract art, because prior, everybody, most paintings, for the most part, the majority of them were photorealistic and trying to capture scenes. And so I think that there's potential for interesting byproducts of this time. But can you get into your overall thoughts about what creative professions are going to look like moving forward? And for those creatives listening who might be designers, graphic designers, typographers, what sort of skills and approaches should they be taking to get ready for this wave?
So on the pure creative side or the art side, designers, you know, they're problem solvers, designers, and they maybe problem solve through different channels, but pure creative or maybe more into the art world, I'm looking forward to seeing what the allergic reaction of the art world will be, because the abstract was an allergic reaction. It's, I hate this. And if someone feels that visceral about something, then something will happen. The movement will form, and something will emerge that we can't predict. I'm looking forward to like punk rock in response to glam, or there will be a thing. I can't tell you what that thing will be, because it takes the true artists to bring that to the fore. But I'm looking forward to maybe being part of some sort of movement there. But that's the emergent property that will come from a paradigm shift. When it comes to creatives, designers, people within the creative industry, listen, I might have confirmation bias. I know what I know, and it's really hard to read the label when you're inside the bottle. I'm within a world surrounded by a bunch of people, but I have seen zero evidence that has made any person that I've worked with less valuable. In fact, if I was like investing in the stock of my team members, like I'll be making money on them right now. Their stock is rising. Mm-hmm. A lead on my team called Bianca, who hopefully she'll hear this one day, but if she doesn't, this is all the truth anyway. Amazing art director. Really great art director, like from a campaign point of view, from a concept point of view, putting together, you know, tangible, useful campaigns for our clients. And that's what her job is, like, yeah, was. Copywriter, art director, a bit of a hybrid, but a great, really solid creative. Not really, maybe she'll kill me for saying this, not really necessarily a designer. But her skill set has now just been like augmented and turbocharged, that she can basically, to a level of fidelity and a level of detail, she's a four-person team now, because she's got the idea, she has all of the visual acuity to understand what good looks like, she can write killer copy, and now that killer copy can be like propagated into four different mediums. And so she's just like a one-woman powerhouse out of it. And she's gone through the fire, because she had to go into the fire. Oh man, I've gone back to this days where when I was younger and I was designing. And then she's come out this other side and she's untouchable. And then at the other end of the scale, the more technical team members I have, the ones that are probably like the kind of 3D designer ninjas, the ones that are already potentially within Unreal Engine or After Effects or Blender or something. There's a real correlation between people that know 3D or people that know photography and getting really good image results out, because you think in composition, you think in texture, geometry, lighting, staging. How does a visual scene make sense? But especially 3D designers, because 3D designers go from geometry up, right? As in, they have to think of the primitive shapes. They have to model those shapes into other shapes.
And polygons.
Exactly. And then they have to then think of like, how do you then have some texture on it. And then you have to think about how's the light going to interact with that texture? And then you have to think about how the camera's going to look at that thing. And if you can click it, then you can prompt it. Because if you can click all the buttons, or you can use your stylus, or you can use your toolbar, then you just need to retrofit the words to what you're doing. And then you get to that point and you're like, wow, you're way better than I'll be. Knowing those things. So the technical end, they're now using language. And then the language end, they're now using like visual. I'm like, now they're diametrically opposed normally within the creative process, but now, but like Julia, who's like this like unicorn guy on my team that I'm just have no idea how he does half the things that he does, can now write killer copy. And I'm like, dude, this is, we're taking it for granted that this is normal, but it's not normal. This was not possible 2 years ago. Yep. It is now possible. And that is such a, so just through that lens of, for any creative or designer, listen, I'm not the evangelist to say it will fix all of your problems, it will do all of those things, but it can certainly augment the parts of the process that you do not like to do or you're not good at doing. And I am not good at doing a lot of things. So I find it really powerful because I'm like, great, I can now communicate better with clients. I can now synthesize information better for the CEO when he's asking me like, what's going on with that and that. I can come up with better ideas quick. And the final thing I'll say on that is most of my first drafts suck, really suck. So I don't understand why anyone thinks that they should take any first draft that comes out of any AI. Are you that good that your first draft is rock solid every time? Because mine isn't, man. I then take it and then I rewrite it and I look at it or like whatever, if it's writing or designing, it's always iteration. I've just got a really good first draft machine that will help me go from the blank sheet of paper to something that is usable way quicker than my brain can do. And I'm grateful for that fact most of the time.
Yeah, I feel like you're touching on something huge, which has been a common denominator with a few conversations that I've had here, which is that the real skill, particularly amongst designers and copywriters, is having good taste and having a real comprehensive understanding of how your art works and operates. And I think the idea of 3D designers, that's really fascinating, but it makes a world of sense. But yeah, I think artists are not going away because you need people with an artistic eye who understand art and composition and things like that. So I feel like that's so important. The mediums are going to change, but a real artist, that artist mentality and being trained, I think it's where everything is going to be at in terms of being a creator.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I watched another podcast the other day and Seth Godin, the GOAT, was on it. And this idea of just starting to do something 30 minutes a day and pushing through, that's what kind of what he said on it is, in if you're not doing it 30 minutes a day, then you're getting left behind. And that's maybe one way of looking at it. But the 30 minutes a day thing that stuck in my head. So I've literally scheduled 30 minutes a day into my calendar, test a new tool a day. That's it.
Oh, wow.
Test something new a day, like whether it's feature set or tool set, test something new every day. The one that you really love, the one that you'll know that the one that you want to go back to is mm-hmm. the one that you want to go back to. And then you then should go back to that one. I'm an old man now. I'm a Midjourney guy.
Yep.
And I'm a GPT-4 guy. Like those two, for me, I can get 70% of my stuff done
with Midjourney and what?
And ChatGPT. We've found some really neat ways with GPTs to strip out the bullshit from what comes from it. As in, don't get it to over articulate answers. Don't get it to use 200 words when 10 can do. Don't get it to basically like one quick tip on that one. Just ask it to speak like an eighth grader. Hmm. Use simple language, please. I'm a simple human being. Use simple language with me and don't use these kind of over aggrandizing words.
Yeah, I know. ChatGPT is so bad at that. They over adverb, death by adverbs.
And don't be coming up to me with your homework and telling me how you made it and why you made it. You don't need to. I'm cool. You're good, man. You're doing great. You don't need to tell me. You don't need to be so needy.
Don't need to show your work. Yeah.
And so you kind of like ask it to within a GPT is probably the easiest way of doing it, to make it repeatable. But you just ask it to strip away those things. And then suddenly just say, I'm going to throw words at you and you're going to give me visual ideas about what those words are. And then I don't need a prompt builder. Mm-hmm. I need an idea helper. Like I need someone to go, actually, like this company is all, like this maritime insurance company. They've got this whatever the flavor of the creative we have to come up with needs to connect with that person. Like, how do I get some visual abstraction here? And I just ask it for some visual abstraction. And the same way, like, I can ask Midjourney to come up with a very simple image, and I'll ask ChatGPT what it thinks of that image. And like, those two things flip-flopping between those two things, I've got three other people sat in my little room.
That's the amazing thing about it. I feel like not enough people use it as a brainstorming buddy. You treat it like a colleague. Hey, what do you think of this? And it gives you a little idea, and it's a bad idea, but there's a nugget of something interesting, and you say, oh, expand on that. And then it gives you an idea. Yeah. And the back, because it's never going to nail it on the first go, as you said.
No.
The first draft of nothing is good, and it never nails it. But it can, if you go back and forth and engage with it, you can get to some very interesting places.
You should ask it to find like the logical paradoxes in your own writing. Ask it to find inconsistencies.
Oh,
ask it to see. That's another one that I do really often, because I have to try and, again, synthesize information to a bunch of different people, whether it's going to customers internally. Like, some of it, AI's buzzword bingo at the moment. Like, I don't want to just speak in these kind of overly techie terms.
Yeah.
So I ask him, like, how do I explain this to my son? He's 7 years old.
Yep.
Or can you find this logical inconsistencies in my argument? I feel like I'm not getting the point across correctly. Those things, it prompts me.
Yeah.
it literally prompts me back.
We're getting determined. We're getting a Skynet. They're using us. We think we're prompting them, but they're prompting us.
I'm not on that. Well, I have really a lot of faith in humans. And I also just have so much faith in the tenacity of humans to do interesting things that it's going to come for different parts of our industry.
Yep.
But I just think it's going to come in positive ways. Over time, there's going to be pain.
For sure.
Over time, I think it will come in positive ways.
Yeah, I agree. So I'd love to get into the overall operationalization of what you're doing, because you're working across a lot of employees, a lot of clients across disparate industries, and basically scaling these operations, scaling the use of AI internally. But it's such a moving target. Things change every single day. So what is the operationalization process like with AI when you start to discover these new protocols? Oh, and this worked. Then 2 weeks later, okay, we need to update it, or we need to do. What is the overall scaling like with these solutions?
So we've packaged it up into two approaches. I'm really bad at naming things, so people always shout at me, put names out there into the world because they stick. But we've got two tracks. AI enhanced, that's our efficiency play. That is a thing where we are looking at how the kind of correlation of, say, for example, it takes someone 10 hours to create a character design.
Yep.
By hand. The AI enhanced version of that could take us 2.5 hours to, like, so, you know, 75% reduction in hours. What that means is that has a defined cost. By having a defined cost means we've done more than 10 of them, or more than, depending on with the complexity, more than a statistically significant amount of them. And it has a defined pipeline and tool set. So we're like, most character design, some things would be either DALL-E or Midjourney for character design in the AI enhanced track, for example. But that means that we know what our inputs are, we know what our outputs are, we know what our tooling is, and we know what our expectations of that tooling can be, and our expectations of people can be around it. We don't get it 100%, but we get it right enough in the macro. And we also have quite an open conversation with customers at the beginning. We really try and bring the customers along on it, try and provide them the safety net to want to experiment as well. But those definitions of Midjourney is the Swiss Army knife, pretty much.
Yeah.
And Stable Diffusion will then be the scalpel. So is when we don't know what we're going to do, and we have to then start up and find and explore. And then Stable Diffusion, if we really know what we're going to do. Stable Diffusion, you have more technical choices at the front end where you have to be like, I need to know what model I'm using. I need to know then if I'm going to be using a LoRa or low rank adaption model on top of it. I need to know how that model was trained. I need to know the data that's inside it really. And I need to know how to prompt it. I need to know how to negative prompt it. I need to know, there's this more to know. But if I'm going to do 1,000 of them, very similar, I'm going to go the scalpel route. If I need the one character design, but about 75% faster, I'm going to go the Midjourney route because I only need one. And then there's the shade of grays in between that, as in, okay, that's where things get maybe a slightly more adaptive process is in, okay, we need 15. 15 is not enough to train a model. So we should probably just maybe lower our operational efficiency, whether it's a 50% more efficient process. We'll still use the Midjourney route, but we know we're going to probably have to post-produce quite a lot because we're going to have to go in and tweak them so they are consistent enough, because Midjourney can get relatively consistent, but not the entire way there, which is to the Swiss Army knife or the scalpel. And so we try and just do that in quite an honest way by putting AI directly as an optional enhancement in front of, so AI enhances an enhancement of the process in front of the customer. We put it in the customer's hands. Do you want us to do this? That's the signal to say that we should go and figure out how to do it. And we just do that. But because we have so much signal,
yeah,
because we have so many projects, we're not waiting, sat looking at an inbox going, I hope a customer comes in with a brief this week. Like, we have the opposite problem. You know, they will come in, and they will come in en masse. And then we have the advanced track. So enhanced about efficiency and about creating robust and known processes with a limited tool set. That's the kind of thing is in on that side of it. Let's try and get it down to one of three, plus Figma, plus Adobe. Like they're the standard, but like one of three, like ChatGPT, Stable Diffusion, Midjourney, get a lot done within that space. And then there's the advanced track. We have, someone on my team put together this awesome kind of product concept ad for Patagonia. And it's based around this kind of premise of the power of 10 infinite zoom kind of thing. Something that AI is quite good at and can deal with maybe. But that was a 12-tool process. So coming up with the idea, the concept idea within ChatGPT, like using that to come up with a conceptual narrative and piece and thinking it through. Then into Midjourney for the like kind of concept art, but also the maybe 60% of the art. But then we had to go into brand specific and product specific territory. So there's only really one way we know to do that at the moment, and that's within Stable Diffusion with Comfy UI. Stable Diffusion, Comfy UI, there's a very limited amount of people on my team that know how to do that. And it's a node-based editor for with a lot of kind of open source plugins that come into it that you can do pretty funky stuff within it. But you can have control nets, for example, that can choose the posing or the typography like pretty tight to a logo or the posing of the product pretty tight. Then we can do some shots in Stable Diffusion, some in Midjourney. This is very much like a VFX pipeline now. Like, yeah, if you think about what these things are, it's basically a VFX pipeline, just with different tooling. Then 11 Labs or PlayHT to do the voiceover. And then I can't remember the name of it now, like one of the Google tools. The music one. I can't remember what it is.
Audio Raw?
One of them. I can't remember the name of it. It will come to me. But a music bed, text to music bed generator with 11 Labs or PlayHT to do a voiceover. Then to Runway, to then use Motion Brush to then animate different parts of a 4-second clip. And then we produce a lot of 4-second clips to then get it to be a 60-second spot. We then go and upscale. Magnifique, or we use different upscalers to upscale either the inputs or the outputs inputs going into Runway or the outputs coming from it. Then we do a bit of sound design, and then we go to After Effects probably at the end for the final 10% for compositing. Like, that's not a workflow I'm going to be putting necessary. We're going to be putting out an in-depth tutorial on anytime soon.
Yeah.
But that workflow gets born from the testing, experimenting, playing, operationalizing volume work that we've done before. Is in like I've got a bunch of people that feel confident. They feel confident they can then take what was probably a 5 to 6 week process for that 60-second spot down to a 24-hour one. And that's then where, and not 24 hours to say like we want to work it around the clock to get to 24 hours, but we've basically just lowered the barrier to entry for 3D motion, 3D looking motion, mm-hmm, for our customers, because 3D motion takes time.
Yeah.
So we lower the barrier. So enhanced, just to recap, enhanced is this idea that you can create a new paradigm, that you can use image generation over stock or over a photo shoot, or over, you can use generating images and generating text and bringing that together in layout, we now have powerful new tools there, and we pass the value on to our customers. When it comes to the more advanced tracks, where like customers are like, I want something that's going to blow me away. We're like, great. We have now got a bunch of new tools that can just take probably what you couldn't think of doing before, and we can do it for you in a time frame. Maybe the way to describe it is in bikes and jet planes are both forms of transportation, right? But you're much more likely to want to take the flight from New York to LA as your form of transportation. So we can get them there super quick. That means they're much more likely to get it. I would be very unlikely to go to LA very often if I had to cycle there. So it just means that you're just, because you lower, it's not just about speed, but because you lower this barrier to entry, because you offer more creative opportunity, then it means that your clients can be more creative.
Yeah.
And then they have cooler things. And sometimes we're in the business of not just performance, but we're in the business of brand. Brand can be these intangibles that are like telling these compelling stories. And again, the tools have just unlocked that for them. And we get to go along on the ride and do it with them.
Wow. That is a fascinating workflow. And it must have been a painstaking process to arrive at it. But I'm sure the outputs are pretty amazing.
I'm super proud of the people that are doing it. Yeah. And I'm super proud of the journey that we're on to the point where we're still like, listen, I'm not going to be the guy that says like treat every day like day one, but you kind of forced to most of the time anyway at the moment. We're not going to be doing the same thing in 6 months, and we are definitely not going to be doing the same thing this time next year. I can absolutely guarantee it. And then the other real piece of value I'd hope that we could, that is it's slightly less actionable, but it's more of an organizing principle, where if you start to think of your brand less like your digital asset management system or your CMS or your, you know, the worst of all of them, the PDF brand guidelines, don't think of them as inputs that humans need. Think of those as inputs that models need. So if you look at your brand through the lens of, okay, my brand assets are not brand assets, they are image tag pair data sets. That's what my brand assets are now called. We don't make libraries anymore, we make models. If you start to think of it in that way, then you will be going on a road to a brand that can eventually self-articulate, to where a brand design system makes things rather than a brand design system stores things. And that's a different world to get to when you start to unlock it. Like your tone of voice is a system prompt. And if I was building a brand today, which we are, but like if I, you know, we're doing it with our customers, but if I was building a brand today, that's where my first principles would be, is in like, what's my data set going to be in a year's time? Because that's your own ability. That's your power. I've actually got one more thing on that as well. I was talking to a friend today who was working with a European textile company. And they've been around for over 100 years. And they have 5 million proprietary textile designs within their database. And I was like, this kind of like big industrial company. Man, and like textiles, what are textiles? They're patterns. And they're really known for them. I said, man, that's the winner right there. Because that's an offline data set of this, probably this really unique thing. That's where a brand has power, much more power now than other points, like of maybe saying you're differentiated because of something else. Like brand, your brand is your data, and that's not directly actionable today. It is semi-actionable today. 18 months time, I think it'll be very actionable.
Yeah, I think you hit on something enormous, which is the idea of allowing and enabling brands to self-articulate and not having style guidelines in it locked up in a PDF, but something that basically makes it a living, breathing, self-replicating soul online, for lack of a better...
If you articulated that and you activated that approach today, you probably maybe would get slightly dodgy results.
Yeah.
But then, what was it, 6 months ago, Will Smith eating spaghetti and like some really crazy thing, is that was the version of AI video. And now look where we are.
Yeah.
All of these things, it's the worst they will ever be is right now.
It's really fascinating. I'm curious, being in such a AI-enabled, tech-savvy company, what has been the admin approach to AI? I'm sure you guys have a lot of automation set up that eliminate all the grunt work that nobody likes.
Great question. So a whole new set of problems come up. And the main one is prompt storage. Okay, so we do a lot of brand prompting work. But to get to it, for example, we did a big image kind of project. Only netted out to be 150 assets, but we did probably 3,000 images, prompts and stuff to get to that 150 that we curated out of those Midjourney stuff. This is, you have to go super wide in Midjourney. And the client comes back and asks for it again. And then we're doom scrolling in Discord to find the things that we want. Or we're going to, we have no team Midjourney beta that we can go to one thing. You start to go, there's no collaboration. So prompt storage is like this new data problem in some ways, because landing on good prompting is the thing that unlocks brand level work. Is then you have to have really good articulated prompting. You can't say you can always say Coca-Cola, but you can't go say B2B brass SaaS brands, give me their look. You have to reverse engineer their look to get the prompt right.
Yeah.
But then you do that at volume. We were spending days, like as in compiling the time, we're spending days per week asking creatives to fill out spreadsheets with prompts. That was one of our initial pain points. So that admin, like it completely stacked up. So we had to build a system that essentially aggregated prompts and then provided prompt collaboration at a brand level. So we have to build that from a tech point of view to make sure that firstly we have resilience and repeatability, but secondly we weren't like creating a nested inefficient process within the main efficient process. Like mm-hmm. if it takes you an extra hour every project to go back through and find the upscaled one, and then where was the one that I actually like? That's really challenging. And we also had to do some stuff from a legal and compliance point of view. So we are pretty careful about like the provenance of our work. And we're very careful about what we're putting in front of our customers. So knowing what's been made by hand has full copyright. What's been fully generated has no copyright. What's been somewhere in between may have copyright, but we have to prove the process. What model, where's this come from, what version? Those things, again, super relevant, because I don't know where things will go later down the line. We only found that pain when we started doing more of it. Like when we're doing 3 projects, playing around with it, but when you have to have multiple Discord servers running at once with hundreds of people in different things,
yeah,
your naming conventions, your like the automation between like when like Superside is really automated, when a project launches, how it gets staffed, where the assets go. These are technical challenges. At a low level, what people should do is use the new Acrobat, Adobe Acrobat. You can ask questions of PDFs in Adobe Acrobat, and you can combine PDFs in there. So just if you do find something that is, if you're only doing a few projects a week or something, make a PDF of your prompts, then go back into Adobe Acrobat and make a PDF of good prompting tips. Is in Rory Flynn, your mutual friend. He's got all of the stuff. There's a new chat function in Adobe Acrobat where you can ask it to write. You can say, can you find this for me? And then can you transform it for me?
Oh.
And then you've got your own little prompt storage, but also your prompt repository that will come back to you and do something with it because it's connected. So that's the kind of the gaffer taped version of it. And we just then built systems around that can just support the operations. Because admin gets, firstly, creatives hate it.
Yeah.
Number one. And secondly, like everything is about scale for us.
Yeah.
Does it scale out? If it doesn't scale out, then if it remains niche, it's cool. We just have to be super honest that it will be a niche thing.
Yeah.
If it's going to be big, it's going to be big. But there's not much in between.
Are you hand coding your own automations, or are you using some kind of provider?
We are doing our own, but we're always open for trying to find like better man. There is dev tools for creative AI automation don't exist, really.
Yeah.
There are definitely Adobe, like with GenStudio, starting to plug some things together, but like everyone's within their walled gardens. That's the problem. Mm-hmm. Is in like open source is closed source, and they do not connect and talk to each other. The middle ground there is probably Zapier. Yep. Zapier is still super powerful. And I've also got a bit of an intuition that Zapier is probably going to make a few more plays.
Oh, yeah.
In that space as well. So I would, if I was going to put my eggs in a basket, and if I didn't have developer resource that I could pull on, and we didn't have a larger thing, I would go down the Zapier. Like that, I love that company anyway. But
yeah, they're great.
That's where I would put my eggs in terms of send yourself an email with the prompt and get Zapier to pull it into a thing for you, or whatever. But there's a thousand different ways you could articulate that.
Yeah. Phil, this was a lot of fun and really great. So thank you for taking the time. Before we wrap up, I like to ask people if they have any AI life hacks.
Yes. The one I like to do the most, so if I've dropped the kids to school and I will drive back, or I'm walking somewhere with AirPods in, I'll go on ChatGPT. I will press the voice button and I'll say to it, I'm going to tell you about all the things that are going on in my mind. I want you to categorize them, unpack them. I want you to then feed that back to me and I'm going to keep on talking until this stops. And I'll just then talk out loud the stuff that's in my brain. And then I then press stop and it will sit there and it will organize all of my thoughts into one thing that I can then just send and put into my Notion or put into my email. And within 10 minutes, I have probably done like the best self-therapy of cleaning my mind that I can possibly do. And it's actually useful. I've just put it into a place that has got some use. So that's the one, is put the phone away, AirPods in, walk and talk to ChatGPT.
I'm smiling because I did a LinkedIn video on that exact thing.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, during Thanksgiving. It's as always with Thanksgiving in America, you constantly go back and forth to the store because there's always missing things. So I had to do all this grocery shopping and I'd be walking around and it was so crowded and there's these big long lines. And I'm like, I have to somehow make use of this time. And I was like, oh, let me just talk to ChatGPT, talk about all the things that are swirling around in my mind, my action items, and she coordinates it. And I come home, it's all project managed for me. Then you can get crazy and you can put that into a grid or a spreadsheet, upload that into your project management system in any case. But yeah, no, you and I are definitely on the same page. That's an awesome life hack.
Yeah, it's the one I always come back to. And but probably if I went back through my ChatGPT history, it's like super weird stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm just constantly just talking rubbish to it. But nice. No, this is awesome, man. If you ever want to chat again, this is super cool.
Thanks, Phil. Appreciate it.
Best of luck to you and the audience.
Thank you. And for all of you listening, I've been a customer of Superside for about 3 to 4 years now. They are fantastic. They never cease to amaze and deliver great design on time, on budget. They're wonderful to work with. You all should check them out because they're awesome. I vouch for them and I'm still working with them. Phil, thanks again. This was fantastic.
Thank you, Nick.
Thank you, as always, for listening to Brand Bods. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button today so you never miss an episode. Want to learn more about AI and share actionable strategies with other AI marketers? Join the Brand Bods LinkedIn group, a dedicated space for marketers to collaborate, learn, and trade strategies in the field of AI. Dive into vibrant discussions, get inspired by innovative approaches, and be part of a network that's shaping the future of AI in marketing. Don't miss out. Visit brandbotspodcast.com/LinkedIn today and join. That's brandbotspodcast.com/LinkedIn. I'll see you there.